Welcome, Iron Maiden fans, to episode 11 of the Iron Maiden podcast. This one's dedicated to Maiden's album Brave New World. After Bruce Dickinson's departure from the band, I guess Maiden were in what you call kind of a dark period. So this album was one album I guess the fans were really looking forward to, especially because it brought back with Bruce Dickinson and Adrian Smith. So again, a lot of positive vibes from this album and a lot of expectations which were absolutely fulfilled. And yeah, I know it's been a long while since we've been doing a podcast, but it feels great to finally be back and, you know, getting off my ass and finally getting down to doing this episode. So, Sean, how have you been?
Hello there. I am doing great. How long has it been? About 5 months. Iron Maiden fans, we missed you so much, but we can assure you that we've definitely been honorably doing our Iron Maiden duty. It just sometimes things happen, but here we are. We're happy to be here. I'm doing great, thanks. I'm very excited to be doing Brave New World today because Brave New World really is the kickoff of the current lineup that the band has. It's a brave new band, so it's such a perfect name for the album. As a matter of fact, just going back to Bruce and Adrian coming back into the band, this is back in 1999. What had happened was I actually hooked up with Maiden for about 3 weeks on the Ed Hunter tour. That's the reunion tour they did, the greatest hits kind of thing. So there was a lot of talk about what was happening, production, you know, all those type of stuff. So the information I'm giving you actually is coming directly from them, as told to me, I guess. So I guess it's still hearsay. The exciting thing I heard first off was that they were going to do a six-piece lineup. And at first, I guess we're all a bit surprised that it wasn't the quote-unquote classic lineup from the 80s. But then hearing what the band was telling me about the direction of the music and having three parts and this and that, it made a lot of sense. And something that was really exciting was they had mentioned they were going with Kevin Shirley on production. And I remember Kevin Shirley because he produced one of my favorite Rush albums, at least post-Signals, for all you Rush fans out there, the album Counterparts. And he did all the engineering for that, and that's a killer sounding album. He also has a lot of really strong credits with, at the time there was a hip band called Silverchair, and did some work with Aerosmith and Led Zeppelin. So the one thing I knew immediately that the album should sound at a very powerful level, because Iron Maiden had forever, of course, been with Martin Birch, and Martin Birch had that signature sound. Martin retired, and then the production really went downhill with all the Blaze material. I'm on the personal opinion that production does definitely, in the right situation, enhance the enjoyment of a studio album. First thing I noticed was when I actually got it was that I was waiting in line for the first time in a very long time. I'm guessing you did too, Rowan. It was really exciting. I remember probably about a week and a half before it actually was released, I was in a record shop, remember those? And they were playing actually some of the tracks. And I'm kind of like, wow, this is really sounding good. And the stereo system in the place wasn't that great. But immediately, I heard the chorus to Out of the Silent Planet, and I remember, wow, this is catchy, and the reaction I had was, this is the most catchy thing I had heard since the 80s, going back to my favorite probably leading up to this one, which was Summertime, and it was funny, I got in line at midnight, and I had a rental car, and the thing I couldn't wait to do was, it had a nice car system, so I knew I could crank it up and have good bass and everything. And that's what I did. I got the CD and I pulled over to a deserted parking lot and I just threw it on and I turned it up real loud. And coming right out of the gates, the production was phenomenal and that blew me away. Rowan, why don't you share with us, do you have a story kind of leading up to the album, the anticipation? Did you have to get in line yourself over there in India? Or how does it work with release dates and times over there?
Well, actually, when Brave New World just came out, I guess I was about 10 or 11, so I was just getting into Maiden at that point of time, and I remember Brave New World, you know, coming out, and, you know, some of the record stores had it, and they had posters up and stuff, but at that point of time, I still didn't explore Maiden, at least a newer side of Maiden, or Brave New World for that matter. I was still getting into their classic stuff, so
did you ride a bicycle to the store, though, or did someone give you a ride in a car?
Yeah, my dad gave me a ride in his car. So
you go, Dad.
All right. So yeah. So for me, it was kind of from listening to the older stuff to getting into the newer stuff. But yeah, I did have that experience for the next album which they released, which was Dance of Death. But overall, when I first heard Brave New World, I was absolutely blown away by it because it in terms of production, that's probably one of Maiden's best produced albums. It reminds me of albums like Number of the Beast and Power Slave, which were absolutely spotlessly produced by Martin Birch. So, you know, it brought back that sense of classic Maiden, and at the same time, Maiden also came out as a new band with this new progressive direction that they were heading into, and they still sounded great. So again, having Bruce back in the band was, in itself a really, really huge present for, Maiden fans. It brought a lot of the Maiden fans back. And I think the album Brave New World kind of just justifies it because every song on it is absolutely brilliant. So I enjoyed the album immensely. And for me, I guess Brave New World is one of those, again, landmark records that Maiden have put out. And for me, to be honest, I guess Brave New World is the best Maiden album that I've heard since Seventh Son of a Seventh Son. So from there, definitely, I guess Brave New World set the standards really high, brought many Maiden fans back, and I guess it was a big win for all the Maiden fans who were dying to listen to Bruce again.
Well, it's funny you should say that because I had the same reaction. Most of us over here in the States were very excited when we heard the album, and my to this day it's probably in my top three or four Iron Maiden albums of all time. And just kind of talking track by track here, it actually kicks off with what at the time was not one of my favorite songs on the album, but again, it definitely put a stamp on how well produced it was and the power of Bruce's singing. I mean, everything was just back to a point where it had that distinguishable Iron Maiden sound. And of course, a huge part of that was Bruce Dickinson. Was having Mr. Adrian Smith back in the band, because when Adrian went away, I was gutted back in the 80s when I found out Adrian wasn't in the band, and so were a lot of us, because he brings just a certain finesse and a certain influence on the writing that really balances awesomely with Harris and Murray, the way they attack the sound, to really put together that Iron Maiden sound that we had grown to love during the 80s. That was back. Yannick, of course, sounded better than he had ever sounded. And so this new lineup, it was exciting because it wasn't just nostalgia, it had a brand new lineup. And the Wicker Man, I actually prefer they released a single version, which I don't know if you have that, buddy, but the single version actually has a little more of an enhanced chorus, an extra vocal track. That's a really exciting one. Wicker Man was a single over here, very well received. To this day, we actually perform it in the tribute. Oh, and if you don't know, I'm Sean Muse, founder, lead singer, Run to the Hills, Iron Maiden tribute band. If you haven't already, go to Facebook and just type Run to the Hills, Iron Maiden tribute band. You'll recognize, you'll see Steve Harris from Iron Maiden. He has a fist on my chin. There's a picture there, et cetera. So you'll like it, spread the word, et cetera. There's some big things. We're actually got a brand new lineup. We're starting next week, so check it out. But that song, that's in the set list still, because that's a really popular song with the fans. It's a good crowd participation song. What's your take on Wicker Man?
Oh, Wicker Man for me is probably one of the best Maiden openers that I've heard again since the classic Maiden. So, it reminds me of absolutely awesome songs like Where Eagles Dare and, Aces High. So again, when I heard Wicker Man for the first time, that was my, highlight of the album. Initially, at least as I was getting acquainted to Brave New World. So definitely, Wicker Man still has a really special place, as a Maiden song for me. And again, I guess great musicianship and, what a perfect way to, open the album. So again, I think Wicker Man, a great song. Adrian Smith's done some killer guitar work, especially his solo. I love that.
Yeah, the solo on that is unbelievable.
It's freaking crazy. So yeah. Wicker Man for me was a fantastic way to open the album, especially where the way the guitars go. It's like this perfect blend that you see between heavy metal and rock and roll. So again, there are a bit of progressive elements in this album, but then again, it pulls you back to what you love about the classic, Maiden. So again, I think Wicker Man, what a great way to open the album. And then right after that, we have Ghost of the Navigator. Again, an absolutely phenomenal song. Just the intro melody in itself is so catchy. So, you're already like 15 or 20 seconds into the song and you know that this song's going to be good. And I got to give credit to that. I got to give credit for that to Yannick Gers because, he puts together some great melodies. And again, this happens to be, one of Yannick's best songs that he's written. It was written, I guess, with Steve Harris, Bruce Dickinson, and Yannick himself. So that again is a good, it's a really great song, and I think Bruce has done a lot of justice to the song. Some of the vocal parts in the song are absolutely phenomenal. So Ghost of the Navigator again, an absolutely killer song. So when you listen to the Wicker Man, you think, okay, what's in store next? And when you listen to Ghost of the Navigator, you're like, wow, there it is, absolutely brilliant. So
yeah. I did on that when Ghost of the Navigator, again, I'm kind of relating back to the first impression when I listened to it right after getting it. Wicker Man's very straight ahead tune, like a classic 80s style Maiden. The Ghost of the Navigator quickly established that, okay, we got something new going on here. And that's where the whole prog element came in. And the buildup, of course, is outstanding. It's a great song, of course. It's a grower. I found it to be a grower versus an immediate impact song for me. But the other thing, and again, this is another situation where the production is stellar, and Bruce's voice is perfectly mixed on this album. And you made a comment earlier about the sound and production. I think this is probably the best definitely post-Martin, best sounding production. It has more production than their album since. The other ones have been more raw. Some aren't even mastered. This one's mastered actually by George Sterling of, George Marino at Sterling Sound. He's done everything from ACD. I mean, every single top band, mastering wise, this guy is the guy, and they had him. And you can tell the difference when you have good mastering with the production. That's something that's really awesome about the album. The next track on the album, after Ghost of the Navigator, Brave New World. This is a song that is kind of a companion to Ghost of the Navigator. It has the same type of feel to it. Not one of my favorites on the album, but again, just a terrifically strong song, good vocal hooks, etc. What's your impression of Brave New World?
Brave New World for me, I'd like to echo that sentiment, especially it gives you the same feeling that you get from Ghost of the Navigator, that lovely slow intro, and then they go right bang into the verse. So I enjoyed Brave New World, obviously not as much as the first two songs, but again, this song has certain highlights in itself, like especially this part of the song, which was my favorite, this melody. We'll be right back. like I was saying, you know, melodies like this definitely, you know, build up crowd participation, especially when you're playing this song live. And for me, again, Brave New World, I think it has more of an effect on me when I hear it live than when I'm hearing it than when I'm hearing the studio version, actually. So in those aspects, again, I think Brave New World is a great song. Not as good as the first two, but definitely one of the really, really good songs in the album. Moving to the next song, which is Blood Brothers. This song for me, I guess, would probably be my favorite song on the album. This song drove me absolutely insane. I would listen to this song every day on my way to school, on my way back from school, on my way to college. Like, this song has been with me for like 10 years, and there hasn't been a day where, you know, I probably listen to this song at least twice every day. That's how much I love this song. It was written by Steve Harris, after his father passed away. So again, there's a lot of emotion in this song, and I guess in the final Frontier World Tour, Bruce Dickinson dedicated this song to Dio. May he rest in peace. So again, this song has a lot of emotion in it, and I think Yannick helped Steve write this song. So again, I think this song is absolutely, it's got a lot of soul in it, some beautiful melodies. You know, the vibe that you get from this song really brings emotion into you know, the writing, and you can see the thought process that goes behind every song. So, you know, when people think of heavy metal as noise and stuff, there's a lot more to it, and songs like Blood Brothers help you know, accentuate the soul and emotion that goes into the writing process. What's your take on it, Sean?
Very similar. Yeah, I think the biggest thing about it is knowing the backstory, Steve Harris turned, you know, relating it to his father. And the song has actually taken on a new meaning. The latest tour, Final Frontier Tour, as all you wonderful, lucky fans have been to those dates have seen, they turned it into a dedication to Ronnie James Dio. Rest in peace, Ronnie James Dio. Again, just the tie-in that we're all connected, and you know, blood brothers and sharing experiences together. So that's really, it's not a, as far as the song itself, it's not something that I would label as one of my favorites. And that kind of goes for the next one, The Mercenary. That's Mercenary is another straight ahead song. If I had to pick my least favorite song, and I want to say this with caution, every single track in this album is strong. There's no question about strength. But of course, everyone's going to have their favorites and least favorites. If I had to pick my least favorite of the whole album, and it's funny because the one after it's my favorite probably on the album, but The Mercenary, very strong song to this day. Definitely not something that I would consider a highlight of the album, but it's another straight ahead song. There's really, it seems like there's three straight ahead songs on the album: Wicker Man, Mercenary, and later we'll talk about Fallen Angel. How does Mercenary strike you?
Again, Mercenary, personally for me, it's not a really good song. To be honest, I wouldn't listen to it on the album. But yeah, I like the rock and roll version of it. It's like one of those good, you know, catchy numbers. Kind of gets the crowd going. But yeah, I wouldn't call it the worst song on the album, but definitely not the best either. I guess it would be somewhere, you know, in the middle. One of the songs that I wouldn't really listen to. But then again, I guess it's got its plus point in, you know, some way.
Well, then after The Mercenary, this is the exciting part. when Dream of Mirrors came on.
I've seen your face, seen this room, been in this place. Something vivid comes again into my mind. All my hopes and expectations, looking for an explanation.
Have I found... I'm going back to that first experience, and I'm hoping that you like this one as much as I do. When I was listening to this, and that it went real quiet, I was like, wow, this is really good. And I got to tell you, when the chorus came on for Dream of Mirrors, it was I really felt like I was maybe 20 years younger. And I wasn't very old at the time. Let's see. In 2000, I was 31 years old. But I felt like I was, we'll say 19. I had that same wow reaction to that for the first time in if I have to be candid here, Summer in Time was the last album that really just blew me away and grabbed me. It was actually the first one I actually got, but that was the last album I got that excited about hearing a track on. And being a singer, Bruce in the band, I worship Bruce Dickinson, in case you didn't know that already. His singing on that was something only Bruce Dickinson can do to elevate an already awesome music track to the stratosphere. I think I'm pretty sure, Luann, I was, this is about 2 a.m. by now. I'm just headbanging. I think I might have sprained my neck. I was headbanging so hard on that song. And of course live it's terrific, but the studio version of this is probably the highlight of Iron Maiden. One of the biggest highlights of Iron Maiden, this and Coming Home off the latest album, are probably two of the hugest highlights for me in the last probably 20 years of Iron Maiden's catalog.
Well, for me, I guess the Dream of Mirrors was one of those songs which I wouldn't call, I can generally recognize a Maiden song, but when I first heard Dream of Mirrors, if Bruce Dickinson wasn't on vocals, I'd have been a bit puzzled. It's more or less Maiden shifting from what they've previously been doing. It has very few of those recognizable Maiden elements in it. But then again, it's a great song. It's got this really cool rock and roll vibe to it. And it's really catchy. And I love the acoustic parts that Yannick brings in. So again, I think Dream of Mirrors was one of the strong songs in the album. Definitely not my favorite. But I think it's got a lot of soul in it, again, this song. And this song was actually written, for the Virtual 11 album. This song, The Nomad, and The Mercenary, these three songs were actually written for the album Virtual 11. And I guess Blaze Bailey had, a bit of the writing credit for Dream of Mirrors. So I guess he...
Thanks, thank you.
So I guess he had something to do with this song. Anyway, it's a great song nonetheless. Moving to the next song on the album, The Fallen Angel. I absolutely love this song. I don't know why. I guess it's that catchy part right before the chorus. And I think Bruce, again, done a fantastic job on this song. I was actually reading Kerrang's magazine and their review on Brave New World, and I think they call The Fallen Angel the worst song on the album. But I definitely differ on that one. It's an absolutely fantastic song. I think this is one of those quick numbers. Again, one of the disappointing facts about this album is that some of the good songs didn't make it live. Like, I was definitely expecting to hear The Fallen Angel live, and I didn't get to hear it, so...
Oh, you can get it on YouTube, though, buddy.
They did?
Yeah, they did play it at a gig. There's actually a gig, and it's on video. It's a pro shot. South America, and it's great.
Yeah, I wish they would play this in India, but unfortunately, I don't think they did. But again, The Fallen Angel, I think one of those nice, quickie numbers, you know, like Ace is High and, you know, or, you know, Be Quick or Be Dead, songs like that that you really enjoy. So for me, The Fallen Angel is something like that, one of those songs that I absolutely enjoyed and loved. Oh, what about you, Sean?
Ah, okay, so Fallen Angel's next. Of the straight ahead rockers in the album, it's my favorite verses. I like it even more, I think, than Wicker Man, and definitely more than Mercenary. The Fallen Angel, as far as who wrote it and so on, you know, the Adrian Smith. It's an Adrian Smith, Steve Harris special. It's got that, you know, the blood and guts of Harris, and it's got that nice guitar sentiment of Adrian Smith.
Oh, well said.
Pardon?
That was really well said.
Oh, well, thank you very much. And may I say, you say things very well, too. And again, folks, if you haven't seen the live version, it's very good. Just you can YouTube it. Just, you know, type Fallen Angel live and so on. The next song, Nomad, is a track where I like the track overall, but if I had to highlight, I love when it goes real, that really quiet part. Hear the Dave Murray notes going on. That put goosebumps on my hand. And again, this harkens back to how much Iron Maiden really just can crush each and every one of us with awesomeness. That's a moment that took me back to the 80s where you're just like, wow, this is just so awesome. That moment was really exciting. What's your take on the Nomad?
Like I said earlier, this song for me is kind of like The Mercenary. It's got, there are certain parts of the song which have its highlights. But overall, yeah, it's a pretty good song. I guess this for me would probably be my least favorite song on the album. It's still got some really good parts. Like you mentioned, the bright part, you know, the slow parts in the song, they're really cool. But apart from that, I don't think this song really, you know, have that, you know, make me go crazy effect. But yeah, it's again, one of the decent songs on the album, I guess. Anyway, moving to the next song on the album, which is Out of the Silent Planet. Amazing. I mean, I just love the way it starts off, you know, with the crazy guitar sounds, and you know, then you go slow all of a sudden. And I guess again, Yannick does freaking brilliant job on this. I think he's come out as a really, really good songwriter. And songs like Out of the Silent Planet definitely prove it. The slow parts in the song, the way the song picks up, the progressive elements, you know, they all kind of blend in to make one perfect song. And Out of the Silent Planet on this album, and I guess along with Blood Brothers and The Wicker Man, would be my favorite song in the album. Out of the Silent Planet, absolutely fantastic, a phenomenal song. And the effect that this song had on me was, you know, absolutely crazy, I guess. I listened to the song so much and I never got bored of it. You know, there wasn't a period where, you know, I'd get like, okay, I've heard Out of the Silent Planet too. But I guess that never happened to me because I enjoyed the song so much and it's written so well. You know, this again shows you the level of musicianship. And, you know, I got to give Kevin Shirley credit because the production is so awesome and it blends in so well with, sorry, it blends in so well with every track on this album. So again, Out of the Silent Planet, an absolutely killer song on this album. Sean, I guess you don't like it that much, did you?
Oh, no, I hate it. Yeah, it's hard. No, I'm just kidding. Out of the Silent Planet is the best track on the album. It's also probably the best track Iron Maiden put out as far as catchiness and winning back fans that maybe went away during the 90s and so on. It's probably the best track in the last 25 years. There's some close contenders, like Coming Home and the Latest One and a few others. What's cool about this song is there's actually two versions of it, and I love them both. I'll talk about that real quick. On the album, of course, when I was listening to it the first time, I was totally soaking it in. The acoustic intro is outstanding, the build-up, the singing.
Oh my God, the singing on this, it's
pretty straightforward, but it's so catchy. And the recording power, it all just came together perfectly. Like, if I had to pick one song to say, hey, listen, I know you haven't, over here in the States, some of us lazy fans kind of fell off the bandwagon in the 90s. I was not one of them. I was at all the tours, and I was listening to the Blaze stuff, and you should too. Shame on you if you didn't. But if I had to say, hey, you got to hear this new stuff, this is the first track I point people to for anything 2000 and later. But the great thing is the single version of this was the second single they released, is an abridged version, which normally I'm not a big fan of abridged versions, but what's great is the choruses have more kick drum in them. So it's actually a condensed straight ahead version. So if I'm in a hurry, it's great to have that to go to, the quick single version. I'm hoping you heard it, it's great. But if I have time, of course, I prefer the album version because it has the whole acoustic and the build-up. Big bummer. I was lucky enough to spend a few weeks with Iron Maiden on this tour with a couple of bandmates. And they didn't play this song. And we're like, what? How could they not play this song live?
It's like they're not playing Seventh Son live.
I know. Well, I asked Bruce. I said, what's up? Why aren't you playing this? And I asked Steve Harris. And they just didn't feel that it translated that well live. They felt it was strong studio. I don't agree, because I got proof. They played this one also down in South America. I don't know if you've heard the live version. Google it, or YouTube it, if you will. There's a live version of Out of the Silent Planet. And again, of course it's awesome. So that's probably on the Brave New World Tour, the song I'm bummed out the most about not being on the set list is, of course, Out of the Silent Planet. And that's really the climax and crescendo of the album. And then the song just kind of, the album eases out with a very uncharacteristic track, a fun track to listen to, almost kind of a one-off, where you got, for the first time to my knowledge, kind of a Bruce and Steve Harris vocal line going together. A song that's interesting to listen to, not something I would go to first, but again, pretty good way to close out an album. The thin line between love and hate. As I walk the winding road, and the trail is in the blood, there's a thin line between love and hate. Wider divide that you can see between good and bad. There's a gray place between black and white, but everyone does have the right to choose the path that again, never going to be on my top list for Iron Maiden songs. But again, if you wanted to hear something different, and I think maybe a good way to wind down an album, it's well placed as being the number 10 track on the album. How does that strike you?
For me, I guess the thin line between love and hate, to actually be honest, I guess it's one of those songs that I didn't really pay much attention to. On this album, I gave it a couple of listens, but it didn't have that recurring effect that songs like Out of the Silent Planet, Ghost of the Navigator, Blood Brothers and The Wicker Man had on it. So again, I'd listen to it more or less if I was listening to the entire album, because I love listening to entire albums at a stretch. I guess if I were to listen to it just out of the blue, I don't think I'd ever, turn my click wheel down to the thin line between love and hate and actually give it a listen. It's a relatively good song, but again, it doesn't have those, elements that Maiden songs generally have, which will, kind of pull you right to them. But it's a pretty decent way to close the album.
Yeah, what's exciting too is, this is kind of funny actually, here it is 2000, you've got Rowan, who's around 10 or 11 years old, you got myself, Sean, about 31 years old, both being excited about getting this album. And that's pretty neat that Iron Maiden has such a broad appeal. And of course, if you see their shows since, there's two or three generations of Iron Maiden fans now. And that's really going to wrap it up here for Brave New World. If you don't have this yet, get out there and get this album. It's production highlight of Iron Maiden's career. Their best, strongest production with Kevin Shirley to date. That's not taking anything away from the ones that have come since. There's some terrific material. I particularly lean towards their latest one, Final Frontier, being a phenomenal album. We've talked about that before.
Okay, so that sums up the album review for us today. This is definitely, I think, one of Maiden's best albums. And it's this album also marks the start of a new era for Iron Maiden, especially with Adrian Smith and Bruce Dickinson rejoining the band. And Maiden have definitely gone in a different direction with this album. There are a lot of progressive elements, and it's completely different from what Maiden have done in the past. And again, this is one of the albums that marks the newer Maiden. So there is again a lot of debate on whether the new Maiden is good or no. I personally think it's amazing. I love the new Maiden. I love the progressive incorporation in their music and stuff. But then there are some fans who still prefer the older Iron Maiden. But then again, I guess Brave New World is a great album, and all in all, it's definitely a must buy for any Iron Maiden fan out there, new or old. And if you're one of those Iron Maiden fans who's a little apprehensive about checking this album out, I'd definitely suggest you, go for it. And it's definitely one of the coolest Maiden albums, especially, after 93, after Bruce's departure, when many Iron Maiden fans, turned away from the band because of the new singer. And again, the change in style, the darker lyrics and everything. Some people didn't adapt to the X Factor. So I think with, Bruce and Adrian rejoining the band and, putting out an album like Brave New World, it definitely attracted, many of the Maiden fans back. But then there were still, a few who felt like they've lost their old Maiden. But I'd still like to go, a shout out to you guys and make sure that you guys check this album out, because it's definitely worth it. What about you, Sean?
Oh, I ditto on that. I think you just summed it up perfectly. I call it Brave New Maiden when this came out. And really, like, here we are, and we're just about to start 2012 soon, and it's the same lineup they've had now for going back to when they reunited in 99. So how many years is that, like 13 years? It seems like yesterday this one came out in 2000. And I agree with you. I think the incarnation of the band as it is now has an awesome blend of the power from the 80s, but also with that prog added in, it's definitely a different flavor from what they did back in the day. And also, true to what you said, is there are a lot of stubborn Maiden fans that really they're just fans from the first album through Seventh Son, actually. They're not even into the couple with Bruce before he left the band. And, they pretty much ignored the 90s. And some of them begrudgingly kind of came back aboard when they reunited. That's just how people can be, I guess, a little fickle. That probably explains why, unfortunately, Maiden's not as United States focused as they were back in the 80s, because they're just absolutely huge all over the world, and on the strength of their new material, so on. Whereas in our country, the market seems a little more stuck in the 80s with what they want to hear. It's a shame, because going back to this album, it was the perfect album at the time, because I longed to hear the ear raid siren type of singing Bruce's trademark, really. And he brought that to the table, and he's done that ever since. And having, like I talked about earlier, Adrian Smith is a absolutely huge influence on the material, with the hummability of it, the melody line, and so on. And plus, he's just such a great player with his soloing and so on. So having him back in was a huge thing for a lot of us, because he left after Seventh Son, of course, and he has since written a lot of the material with Steve Harris and so on. And here they are today. You know, I remember back in 2000, some people here at least were a bit skeptical about whether they could make another go at being at the top tier level in terms of commercial popularity, you know, to sell out larger venues and so on. But again, this year they came around, they packed them in at Madison Square Garden last year, New York City, United States, and they won a Grammy Award for their latest album. The latest album, actually, Final Frontier, is my favorite since Brave New World, and they have some similarities, but the direction that Brave New World represents for the band has some permanence, which is great. It wasn't like a flash in the pan. They were very smart to not try to put out something that was trendy. You know, I remember in the interviews, which I'm guessing some of you have heard, because you can actually listen to the interviews from Eddie Trunk on this. They talked about it's just an Iron Maiden record with modern, up-to-date production, and they've carried it through. And there's some love it, hate it with some of the things they've tried on different albums with some of the fans, but generally speaking, they definitely came back to being at a certain level of respectability with everybody. Even if somebody wasn't in love with the new material, they respected that it was strong, the production was great. So all the things that they were taking shots from people on during the 90s, their low point over here commercially, like, production, singer, this and that, those things went away. So I'm really stoked. And in the 2000s, the Brave New World tour, I spent a lot of time with Iron Maiden when they were over here in the States, Northeast USA, with one of my bandmates, actually, who's still in the band with me, Matt Forsythe. It was just awesome watching them back in the big arena. The album, they did a lot of material from it. And then that, throughout the 2000s, on every tour, pretty much, we were hanging and stuff, and it's still sinking in just to be able to talk to these guys once, never mind hundreds of times. It just blows me away. So Brave New World, brave new band, I hope they keep it going. They're still going strong for sure. And main thing is, I'm gonna ask all you Iron Maiden fans that listen to this podcast to reach out to the others that might not have even heard this album yet, Brave New World, or anything beyond it. Because my hunch is, Rowan, that the people that listen to this podcast, a lot of them actually do have the newer material. I find that the people coming to the gigs and listening to our podcast are fans that have stayed up with Maiden, grabbing their new material and so on. You guys are the key. We need to pretty much just expose people to the music, play the CD for them, get them over.
Absolutely. I actually agree with you on that, because I mean, that's what I do. I have so many friends, who generally the more famous side of Maiden is, some of their older stuff. So, when you talk about Maiden, people probably recognize them, from songs like Hallowed Be Thy Name or The Trooper, which is great because those songs are actually classics. But it's also, important at the same time to, listen to some of the newer material and give that a chance. So whenever I get the chance myself, I always make sure, promote some of the newer stuff, especially, some of the songs on Matter of Life and Death. Like, that's probably my favorite album since Power Slave, I guess. So, some of the stuff on that album is absolutely brilliant. So, whenever I have some free time on my hands and stuff, I definitely, would head over to a friend's house and, we'd go nuts on that album. So it's really important, like you said, to actually listen to some of the newer stuff and acquaint yourself with that. Because if you look at it, it's definitely Maiden in one way or another. They still have those same classic elements, the riffs, the galloping riffs, the melodies, the slow intros and outros, they all have the classic elements of Maiden. Just a few, new elements have been incorporated. So again, I think the newer stuff still great for me. And I urge every fan out there, anyone who listens to this podcast, please go and spread the word. There's a lot of great stuff. And I guess some people haven't yet had the joy of, experiencing this. So if you can, just go out and spread the word, because there's some absolutely great stuff out there.
Yes, sir. And I mean, that's really that sums it up on Brave New World. In its simplest terms, it's a great album. Go out and get it. And I invite you to get, if you don't have it already, everything they've done since, because they're all strong. And I also want to say, since this is probably coming out right around, we'll call it the holiday season, I celebrate Christmas. I think you do too. And forever, what you guys celebrate, you know, we missed you guys. It's been a while. We haven't done that many episodes this year, but we have a goal to get a lot busier in doing these episodes in 2012. And actually, I'm just going to throw in a quick plug for the band I'm in, because we have a lot of new things going on, Rowane. If you're new to this, or if you don't already, I am the lead singer and founder of Iron Maiden tribute band called Run to the Hills. We actually used to be called Killers back in 1997. A lot of great things have happened. We actually were the only band ever to do an Iron Maiden tour date. They had to cancel during the Virtual 11 tour, and they had delays, and we actually got invited to do the show in Hartford, Connecticut, August 1st, 98. So that was a lot of fun. And we've done a lot of things. We changed the name in 2002 to Run to the Hills, just because it's that song that everyone knows. But what I want to announce is we have recently made some changes to our lineup, which we're actually very excited about. We have some tremendous musicians in the band. I'm just going to really quickly say that we have Ethan Brosh as our Adrian Smith on guitar. Matt's still with us. He's Dave Murray. Pete something on bass. This guy is the reincarnation of Steve Harris. He even looks a bit like him. And this guy is just dead on, no for no. And our drummer, Ethan Lowell, very strong. And we have a bunch of dates we're actually setting up right now, Northeast USA in 2012. And we always get invited to play all over the world, and thank you. But it's just tough because I'm, like, for myself, for example, I'm a divorced single dad of two awesome little boys, and that's really my focus. This is my one adult outlet, you know, being the Iron Maiden fan and all that stuff. But, you know, were it not for that, you know, we'd probably come out and play in, you know, India and England and all that stuff. But the other thing, too, is the easiest way to keep track of us is just go to we use Facebook mostly now, so just go to Facebook and we'll call it Run to the Hills. So just do Run to the Hills Iron Maiden Tribute Band, and you'll see it pops up. I think you'll see a photo of Steve Harris with his fist on my chin. You know, that'll kind of be a clue as to who we are. So if you could like us, share it, you know, help get the word out, especially here in the States, because obviously the more people that know what's going on with us get up to the gigs. And I want to say, Rowane, 2011 has been terrific for me on a personal level, and I continue to be very appreciative and excited to do these episodes with you. I think we're actually hitting our stride now, and I know we're going to be banging out a lot of great episodes soon. But I just wanted to wish everyone a Merry Christmas or a Happy Hanukkah or Kwanzaa or whatever you celebrate, and a Happy New Year just in case we don't have another one out yet. And a lot of big things 2012, all things Iron Maiden involved, and up the Irons.
Definitely. If any of you guys actually get a chance to catch Run to the Hills, the Iron Maiden tribute band, definitely go out and see these guys. They're absolutely great. Sean himself, you know, if you've listened to some of the older episodes, you'd see how, you know, close he actually gets to sounding like Bruce Dickinson. So, definitely, great tribute band. Wish you guys a really great holiday season. But right before we go into that, I just want to get into the Iron Maiden news desk and tell you a little about what's up with Maiden. If you're a fan club member, Iron Maiden are planning something called the Ed Venture Weekend. Again, very cleverly titled. It's got a lot of cool stuff. I think they've booked this place called the Hopton Holiday Park. And I think this is only for fan club members. So there's tons of stuff, tons of events lined up. You know, quizzes to test your Maiden knowledge. You know, a karaoke if you want to, you know, compete with Bruce. I think, Sean, you'd be interested in that. There'll be TV screens throughout the park, you know, playing some of, you know, Maiden's live gigs and stuff, some of your favorite DVDs. They've got tribute bands, High on Maiden and Maiden Scotland, lined up to play for you. So there's a lot of great stuff. So if you're interested in it, definitely go check the Adventure Weekend out. Also, the photographic book by John McMurtry, which was flight onboard flight 666 is actually out, so I haven't personally had a chance to buy it because it's really hard to get it here. But if you know, any of you listeners out there have you know, bought the book and really checked it out, feel free to, you know, send us your review of it, and we'll probably read it out on the podcast in the next episode or so. I guess that's all we have from the Iron Maiden news desk. I want to thank everyone who's been listening. Like Sean said, you know, we haven't put out too many episodes this year, probably about 3 or 4, but we're definitely working on, you know, getting back and, you know, banging some really great episodes out in 2012. It's a year that we really look forward to. A new Maiden DVD stands to be released in that year. So again, I think there's a lot of interesting stuff coming up, so stay tuned. You know, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. If you have any feedback about the episode, again, send in those book reviews at theironmaidenpodcast@gmail.com. We'll be sure to read it out in the next episode. I want to thank everyone for listening. This is Rowan Pereira from the Iron Maiden Podcast signing off. Up the irons.
I think the essence of us hasn't changed that much really as people, really. I think we still do the music because we love doing the music. It's not about money. It's nice to make money, but
you can see what we do is we mean it and we enjoy it. It's all about the music, and I think people know that.
We've done it our way. We do it without radio. We do it without basically any media. We haven't become celebrities. We still go and have a drink in the pub with our mates. Nobody has to bow down to us. You know, we're just musicians. We play music, we enjoy it. And if you like our music, God bless you. And if you don't like it, you know what? God bless you too.